Welcome back to another episode of the Front Page Football Podcast. We are back on another Monday night, once again reviewing the latest round of A-League men's action, round 7. Very interesting round. We had some surprising results, but we also had some pretty straightforward results as well. But there's a lot to talk about still. Matt Olson joins me all the way over in WA. Matt, how are we? Looking forward to reviewing another round of A-League men's football.
Yeah, round 6, it was a funny one. I don't know that we necessarily got like 5 or 6 games that you can look at and just go, oh, wasn't that a good round of football? But, you know, we got like a lot to talk about, I think, just naturally with some things that have played out in such a way where we'll be talking about them in 4, 5, 6 weeks' time. That ultimately, I think, is a style of commentary that you really want to, that's that edge that you really want, especially coming closer into Christmas.
I think what's good about once you get to like round 7 is now the narratives are really flying about with certain teams, right? And then also like now with a lot of the teams in the competition, maybe besides Auckland probably, because they're just kind of still riding this wave and I'm not too sure like how serious it is and everyone's still kind of unsure. But outside of that, everyone kind of seems like they've had bad games, decent games, or in a couple of clubs' case, just bad games. It's just kind of, you know, we're getting a real idea of the way this season's going to kind of shape out and the real contenders, the real finals contenders, and the no-hopers, I guess, to put it bluntly. Would you agree with that?
I guess more to like the kind of statement you're making here is that we can have a narrative that we want to see kind of shape into place. And around this time, you know, people are already getting their hot takes in, oh, there's a lock on the 6 and who else can make it, and MacArthur are too inconsistent and stuff like that. And people go that far. But I think the fact that you can kind of build that up into something is more the point that you're making. And I think the biggest culprit in all of this, I think, ultimately from this weekend, has to be the Mariners, because for them to have actually gotten some a decent haul of points off the back of being eliminated from the, quite literally being eliminated from the Champions League, you can just see that that was something that was really important for the club. Alu Kwol, who, you know, rightly criticised in the first part of this season, bags 2 goals and. You know, it's,
take that, Jake Holub.
Take
that, Christian Marchetti as well. Anyway,
you're going to sit here and say Alu Kwol's like good, and he's like, you know, he's built into the natural striker that, you know, the Mariners did. Like, but that's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying that like he got goals. Okay, something happened. Yeah, Mariners actually just have something to hang their hat on now, and there are 4 or 5 clubs at the bottom that can't hang their hat on anything. So like, it's a start. You know what I mean?
Oh boy. Yeah. I'm sure we're going to get to a couple of those clubs soon, and I'm going to have some strong words. I just can't. Yeah. Let's start then. Where do you want to start? Do you want to start with the Mariners? Talk a bit about them, or
I'm more than happy to. But for the fact that because I was going up for the women's game, I didn't actually watch it, so I can't sit here and provide the best commentary in the world. But I do just want to talk about that swing and that momentum, and I think a big part of it honestly comes from the fact that you can still install a lot of faith in Mark Jackson as a manager to get things done with what he has at his disposal. But I think that the biggest problem that's obviously shaping the club is that they just need somewhere the final product can actually come from. Mm. And they're not alone in that. I mean, for a country that's never really produced natural-born strikers very, very well, I don't think, anyway. This is a very familiar problem. So I think you ride the wave, quite literally, to use the Mariners slogan. You know, you come out better on the other side. I think that approach and that patience is going to pay off with someone like Mark Jackson at the helm ultimately.
So I think, so the Mariners, so I wasn't able to watch it live, but given the sicko and nerd that I am, I watched the full replay this morning. The I don't know. It was a weird game. I think, excuse me, geez. I think Sydney played well in the first half. They had a couple of big chances. Douglas Costa probably should have scored. But then there's a long ball goes over the top. Harrison Devenish-Mears just has a mare, and completely misjudges it. I don't know. Yeah, straight red. I think it was a straight red. I think that's fine. I don't know if it was I don't know if it was dog so. I don't think it was the denial of a goal scoring opportunity. But either way, the Mariners, what they did well, I thought, was they knew, and this is something if we want to touch on Sydney FC, which I think is really interesting, is that teams is now a bit more aware of Sydney's high line, and they're actually starting to just not fuck around with the ball, basically. And they're just going, basically, we're going to get the ball, 1-2 touches, and then we're going to look for a runner in behind, because we know that you guys are going to play such a high line, and it's a good chance that we can break that with one run and get a little bit lucky with it onside. But so that's how the Mariners kind of got their red card. And they did that earlier as well with Docker, had a chance. But it's a weird game because I come away with it thinking it was more one of those wins where it was like the Mariners just needed to win, and it wasn't really important how. If you wanted to get forensic about it, you could say the Mariners didn't really play great. On the ball, I don't think they were great. Is this sustainable from Alu Kuo, et cetera, et cetera. But a win is a win. Matt, you mentioned the confidence. Like, you could see the celebration at full time. Like, Jackson was like, they went like 30 seconds over the allocated time. He was losing it, like, at the fourth, because he's just like, we fucking need this, like, right now, you know? You know how it is. So, but I think Docker, you know, what they're missing is like a second Docker as well. Like, because you're referring to the finisher. And I'm not saying they still need that. And who knows? Like, you know, Alu Kuo, in all seriousness, like, the jokes aside and, you know, the inconsistency aside, we've seen Alu Kuo actually score goals consistently in this league before. And he is older now. So there is no reason why these two goals can't spur him on to kind of maybe make that nine roll his own and actually secure it. What was interesting yesterday is Ryan Edmondson was out the squad altogether. Now, by my understanding, I don't think that was anything injury related. So that's interesting. It's one to kind of keep an eye on there. But I think they still need the finisher, but I reckon they also need more creators. They need, like, Fajal had a good cameo. He actually looked like half decent for once. And if he can actually build on that, then that's something. So yeah, like, and before I throw to you, like, Trent Sainsbury's coming back. That's great. Yep, Trent Sainsbury. But that's actually not what they need right now. Like, you know, defensively, they've actually been great. They've actually been great defensively. And, you know, I mean, and people look at the Asian Champions League. I mean, for me, you know more about it, Matt. But for me, I just look at it and think they just don't have the quality in comparison to, and, you know, I don't think a lot of Australian teams would probably be in the same boat in that kind of group league setting, maybe outside of, you know, maybe Sydney and Victory. But, yeah, I think yeah, Sainsbury's going to come back. That's great. But they really need a striker that's going to consistently score. Let's see if Alu Kuo can refine that.
Yeah. I mean, look, it's probably one of those things where, again, I think Jackson's going off his own experience and his own ability with being able to make what he's got at his disposal kind of tick and work into something. But where I would say there's a bit of concern is, I mean, in his mind, think about how long someone like Ryan Edmondson's been at the club. Think about, you know, the experience that Alfie McElmott's already got and how much time he's played. I actually feel that the Mark Jackson inflection on the squad hasn't worked at all, which is another reason why it's kind of gone as poorly as it has.
That's interesting. I think McElmott's been good.
But yeah, but I just think in terms of being able to utilize his role. And again, he probably needs that extra bit of support as well. Like, the squad probably lacks in a lot of those areas going forward. But I just think that that's ultimately a signing where, if it was, you know, if it was someone who was in a different position, let's say, would the squad be any better than what it is now? And so I think he's ultimately wanted, you know, to look at the center of the park for whatever reason. Looking at last year's squad, I mean, I'd have to run the numbers on that one. But it feels like the ailment or whatever he tried to think he could work out I think he just got very pleasantly surprised with how much it wasn't going to work out again. And I think also to reflect on the specific issue of attacking, he's also looked at the fact that he's brought a side in that just lost Jason Cummins and thought, well, yeah, I mean, if we've made this work before, we can do it again. And I just think that the priorities simultaneously are getting them back on track, but simultaneously might have been a big part of the reason why they were derailed in the first place. So I'm stuck between a rock and a hard place in deciding, is Mark Jackson like a genius or is he someone that's just at shortcomings and finding, you know, a myriad of different ways to be able to,
Brilliant.
To stand on that and turn it into something. And what I do like about it is in terms of like, is it more stability? Is it experimentation? What else can you do with the team? I really like that they've got Adelaide next, because Adelaide, I think it's fair to say,
One of the more fraudulent unbeaten teams I think I've ever seen. Yeah.
Yeah. The results are obviously massively flattering, and I think there's obviously still a lot for Cole Veer to tweak out there. So not only do we have a game that on paper is huge stakes for where these teams are going on the table, but then you've also just got this massive chess game going on between Veer Ball and Jackson Ball and figuring out
you're not permitted to use Veer the term.
Banned. We're not saying Veer Ball. We are not saying
right.
Veer Ball.
Thank
I'm
you.
Sorry.
Thank you. That's strictly forbidden until. Yeah, that's no. But the only thing, and I actually do want to touch on something with Adelaide next, so we can pivot to that. But with Jackson, I think yesterday was interesting. It felt like they're experimenting a bit more with their system in terms of. So he mentioned this after the game against the Jets in Unite Round, which I kind of that's kind of stuck with me when he said that. But he kind of said last year, like the Mariners played their 3-4-3 system with the box midfield. It worked. 90% of the time, like he basically said, yeah, like, you know, I kind of didn't need to change anything. You know, the formation kind of just got us results and everything was fine. And I think he knew coming into the season, he had to evolve the tactics. He's not stupid like that. But I think what's interesting is now you watch them yesterday. Sometimes they're in that shape. Then sometimes they're like in a 4-2-4. Sometimes they're in a 4-2-3-1. He's like different sort of variations, different movements that he's trying to get across, different rotations. So that stuff's going to take a little bit of time. And I still think the Mariners, like they're not totally done. You know, it's not like they're going to go from to just like totally out of finals contention. I think that win yesterday was kind of a good reminder that, hey, you know, we can still get results when needed. Anything on Sydney? Quick. Any concern? 3 wins, 3 losses. It's not maybe the start they were hoping for.
I read someone kind of post a question to me. And again, this is something that we could most certainly discuss as the podcast goes on, about like who actually would you regard as the second challenger to Auckland? Like who's going to be really up there on a consistent basis? And bearing in mind that it is round 6 and 7, as strong as a victory have been, I don't think you can put a lot of faith long-term in City or Adelaide. The Phoenix, I'm sure they'll have some better, you know, consistency in them, but it does appear that they've lost a bit, or you know, some of the results really haven't gone the way they have, the way they would have wanted. And I don't think that in terms of the solidity of their defense, it's parked in the same way that it was last season. The natural conclusion to all of that is Sydney would then be a contender. And I mean, from some of the football they've played, they've been absolutely brilliant. But today's an example of, yesterday, is an example of where that actually can really go wrong. And so that's where I'm actually stuck on a verdict for who I actually consider the second best team in the competition. I may be being harsh to victory here with the numbers they've put up, but
yeah, I think you are. We can talk about Melbourne victory later, but I think they've been fucking awesome, honestly. Like,
yeah.
but I think, yeah, I think Sydney, but then Sydney's like Wellington and Sydney and the Mariners are kind of all similar in the sense that I don't know if they're totally sure exactly in possession in particular how they want to play. We know that Sydney off the ball are going to press. They're going to go crazy like that. We know that the Mariners have been pretty solid defensive. We know Wellington are going to try and defend their penalty area really well. But Sydney yesterday, like, they were doing this really interesting thing. They were trying to overload the right-hand side. They had, like, Costa and Lolly were, like, almost occupying each other's space. Ryan Grant was playing as, like, a attacking inverted fullback for a lot of the game. It was very, like, Talay going crazy a little bit. So I don't... that kind of concerned me in the sense that you know, I don't think what Sydney FC had been doing up to that point has actually been bad at all. I think the main thing with them is that they play such a risk-reward style that when it doesn't come off, like when they go and press and it doesn't come off, it's just like bang. It's like a 50-50 chance the other team's going to score. It's a 2v2, it's a 2v1, 3v2, whatever. And Italo knows that. I think he's just like, it's almost like a Postecoglou thing where it's just kind of like, listen, this is how we're playing and, you know, who cares if we're going to concede a couple because we'll be able to score. But that was the kind of downside yesterday because they didn't take their chances. So, yeah. And then there's the whole red card situation.
To that point, with the fact that they've conceded 10 goals at the moment, which, you know, again, run the numbers on that one. But it actually seems as though defensively they are going to become unstuck fairly frequently. Mm. And again, you know, I'm not saying Hayden Matthews hasn't been merited in the kind of rise in his career recently, but I think he's prone to a lot of mistakes at the back. You know, I'd be hard pressed to say that the wing backs are super suited to the way they've been playing at the moment. I don't know that Courtney Perkins has bedded into the squad well enough to be someone that I could see long term as a starting left back. Ryan Grant.
Oh wow! Whoa, that's an interesting take.
Well,
I think, unless you mean,
I'm probably casting my mind too far back when I say that.
I think he's been excellent.
I'm not giving him enough credit of years gone by because when I think of Jordan Courtney Perkins, I probably am still thinking of the guy in like his early 20s who was making a break for it.
He actually is 21. That's the crazy thing.
But okay. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. No. You're thinking like, sorry, you've been 18-year-old Jordan Courtney Perkins.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a wrap on that one. Look, again, I'd say I became most familiar with him being in the Brisbane team under Moon, playing for the Joeys.
Oh, that's right, because you're a big Moon Ball fan. Yeah, I forgot.
Yeah, well, I mean, like he made Alex Parsons very relevant, and then he disappeared, didn't he? So.
Ironically, it was at Sydney FC where he disappeared. I think Sydney defensively they got some things to work on there. Okay, so point about Adelaide. So I wanted to talk about this Ben Fellaini red card because I seem to be in a minority that thinks that this was a clear red card. I don't know where you stand on this. Myself and Mr. Antonis Pagonis were getting a little bit heated on Saturday because you know, the Adelaide United man himself was obviously very frustrated with the decision, and I saw his point of view. I just felt that Fellaini, if you watch the clip, Fellaini swings his left arm out. Sorry, Fellaini. Oh my god! I literally did this last week.
Why are you talking with an accent?
I did this last week. It's Fellaini, isn't it?
Fellaini.
It is Fellaini. Yes.
Fellaini.
I kept saying Fellaini last week. Fellaini. It's like salami. Fellaini.
Yeah, you actually sound like you're talking with like a northeast US accent.
Yeah, look, I don't know. I don't know what's going on here. Okay. Let's just Christian Fellaini. Okay. So he swings, for me, he swings his left arm out. And now, Chanchar slings him to the ground. That's a yellow card, 100%. And he did get a yellow card, if I'm not mistaken. So, no problem there. But he swings his arm towards his head. And I'm just looking at it like, why are you swinging your arm? So, because I think people are saying it's not clear and obvious. Why is VAR looking at it? If it was given, like, you should just go with the on-field decision because it's not clear and obvious. Like, first of all, I think the whole clear and obvious thing has become, like, I think they check everything now. Like, I don't think they check things because it's clear and obvious. Like, I think everything gets checked. Whether that's kind of broadcasted or not, I think everything gets checked. And also, I think when it's contact to the head or face, they just have to check it anyway. So, for me, and I watched it a few times, and I felt that he actually did look at Chanchar before he swung his arm. So, for me, honestly, I thought it was a clear red. I saw a lot of the arguments against it. I understood people's perspective of that probably happens a few times elsewhere in the game. I get that, but also I'm looking at the situation and saying there's actually no need for him to swing his arm like that. There's just no need. So why is he doing it? And I don't think anyone can really answer me and say, oh, he was doing it because no. Why was he doing it? So yeah, it's for me, it was a red.
It's one of those ones that the replay can only enhance the cause for the red card that you're looking for. Because it genuinely looks as though as they've kind of collided and Fellaini rolls over, it then looks like he goes from doing one action, rolling on his back, pulling his arms out to kind of protect himself, to then immediately as a second or third follow-up action, pulling his hand over and getting Kanchar in the head. Now, is that what actually happened? I don't know. But that's what it looks like on the replay. It looks completely intentional.
True. Yeah. That. And I guess because it's slowed down, it's like if... Yeah. If you go and watch it back, maybe if I fired up the replay on Paramount and watched it in live, you know, you'd maybe think like, oh, it's just... Maybe his arm kind of fell on him and that's it. And if it was that, then yeah, like no problem. That's obviously not a red card. But I felt there was a swinging motion. I think for me, what I'm kind of surprised about, I don't think it was one where it was like, oh, like what a disgraceful decision and stuff like that. Like I think people, you know, it's becoming a little bit, I want to say a little bit ridiculous in the A-League, where it's just kind of like whenever VAR intervenes on anything now, it's just kind of like it's the worst decision in human history. It's like let's just kind of calm down slightly. It's an interesting one for sure. It's an interesting one. You mentioned Adelaide before. Like that was the other thing, by the way. So Fellaini red or not, I said this, I think I tweeted this after the game. Fellaini red or not, Adelaide United in that game should never have been in a position where they were protecting a 1-0 lead with 10 men for 30 minutes. Newcastle, like I'm just going to come out and say, Newcastle are an abomination. I cannot believe that for half an hour playing 10 men, Adelaide United, who were not good defensively with 11, let alone 10, Newcastle barely created anything. And obviously it led to those interesting comments by Rob Stanton post-game, who we've been kind of flagging on the podcast the last couple of weeks is kind of, hey, what's going on here? Old mate seems a little bit disgruntled and frustrated, and it seemed like he kind of let it out in that press conference. But I guess a word on, a further word on this fraudulent, in my opinion, fraudulent Adelaide United start. More Adelaide United's inability to kill games off is kind of what I'm getting at, because I just think it's gonna hurt them a bit more as we go along this season, and I guess then the Stanton sort of comments post game.
Oh look, I'll start with the Jets and Stanton, just in saying that I Rob Stanton to essentially like. Over 85-90% of the community at large has probably always looked like someone that's in the job really as someone to essentially be there because they're not really going to have the wage to pay anyone good, and they just want some sort of familiar enough face to look over the club in its current predicament. Like, I don't think he's ever struck me as someone that they wanted out and out to, like, be the man. And with that in mind, there are a lot of characters who I think just end up really getting wrapped into their own figure and just end up making a lot of really poor life choices within the pressure of being a head coach. You know, one of the better interviews I think I've ever done for FPF is with Danny Hay, and talking about him essentially, you know, throwing his life away as the All Whites coach, you know, just missing out on the World Cup with a heartbreak. And then before you know it, he's just in the WA State Leagues to just get away from it. And we never spoke about it at the time. And I was never going to have the integrity to ask about it, honestly, because I believe that it was a pretty honest mistake, and it's been reported on as such. But there were some words of kind of misconduct and things that Danny had done in his past. And I naturally just think that as... you know, a very masculine environment that a lot of these guys come from, the fact that some of them are a bit older, you get that character sometimes. Now, am I saying that excuses Rob Stanton? No. But I can at least understand on a personal level where something like that comes from within him, but that's where, like, our perception of him and what he does as the Jets coach and who he is as a character, the perception of that's always going to be a little bit whack. And look, this is the A-League after all, right? This is the home of Ruben Zadkovich and Mark Redan and Marcus Babbel, all right? You know, Robbie Stanton, does he understand the game a bit? Yeah, I'm sure he does. But, you know, I also really do question his professionalism and his ability to understand who he is as the senior manager of the fucking Newcastle Jets. To go out and do something like that, you know, there's a standard. So I can excuse it and, you know, at least I'd be understanding of it, but it's completely unacceptable the way he carried on. And really, for a mostly young team, that's the last thing they need is carrying on like that. It's pathetic.
So I think what it was, so again, going back to your night round, a lot of these, sorry, I've been mentioning a lot, like, you know, around press conferences because they're really fresh in my head because I was there. But I asked him about, I think I mentioned this on the pod a couple weeks ago, but I asked him about the kind of the lapses of concentration in games, the games constantly being decided by moments with the Jets where they don't take their chances, the other team does, they lose the game. And there's been a lot of that with them under Stanton. And he just kind of took over and just launched into this kind of like, self-deprecating, like, I'm not sure, like, if I basically can do this, like, essentially that's what it felt like, the whole vibe of it. And you know, if the club, you know, I'm a little bit worried if the club don't want me, blah blah blah, this, that and the other. It was just a really strange presser. And then we have this, and it just feels like what's happening is over time he's becoming more increasingly frustrated with the lack of investment in experienced players. And the Jets, I mean, if anyone's watched the Jets consistently over the last 18 months, like the youths thing, it's just, they're just too young. They're just too young. It's simple. Like there's actually some decent players there in terms of their potential, but they cannot, they just don't have the maturity in these games to actually, you know, okay, we've got 11 against 10. Like, let's really kick on and try and get a couple of goals and get a big win against Adelaide United at home. Like, there was no urgency, you know? You're playing 10 men against actually a poor defensive team. Like, go and get a goal. Go and at least get an equalizer, you know? And that's where that frustration, I think, comes from with Stanton. I think what he's probably thinking, and I'm not saying this is right or wrong, he's probably thinking, I'm trying what I can to, like, put some chest hair on these guys, essentially, and it's not working. So, and then this is where coaches, this is where they make mistakes, is because then they just go, fuck this. I'm just going to call these guys out completely in a presser, and this has probably only just made things worse. So let's see. Newcastle got your boys actually this week in Perth in the oh my god, they're both terrible derby. So let's see.
The oh my god, they're both terrible tri series.
Sorry, because then you've got Brisbane the week after.
Yes.
That's right. The tri series.
It's literally like Channel 9, ODI cricket. All right, we got the Australians, we got the South Africans. All right. Hello, and welcome to the 1997 National Soccer League Grand Final live from the CBA Oval. You know, it's that kind of vibe. But I just wasn't really getting into it.
Okay. All right. Let's move on then. Because actually, we got to move on and touch on some of this other stuff. Where should we? Should we move to one of those other tri-series clubs?
Look, it's relevant because quite literally in real time, I'm just reading that Ben Smith's report about the Liquidators. It appears as though the target is specifically Ross Pellegrini's assets and not Perth Glory as an entity.
Yeah. Okay.
Now, that's really crucial.
That's very crucial.
It could have been like one of the first things to flag and say. But I also get that it's hardly a good look for Perth Glory just because they did just come out of receivership, so I get it. Yeah. But it actually appears as though the club is not dying in real time. Can we all take a chill pill, please?
I feel like you're saying this to yourself out loud. Matt, take a chill pill. Let's do 5-6 minutes or so on Perth. Actually, we probably don't even need 5 or 6 minutes. It's basically 1 minute. Yeah. They're fucking terrible. I cannot, like, I'm sorry to be so blunt. Like, I cannot believe I watched the I was only able to watch the first half because I had to go somewhere yesterday. So I watched the second half this morning. I shit you not. That first 10 minutes of the second half, I think Melbourne Victory had a chance on average every 90 seconds. That was insane. Like, there's, you know, there's being bad and there's being low on confidence and there's being poor defensively and stuff like that. And then there's just going out there and being training cones. Like, you know, and I'm just watching, like, what? This isn't, like, I'm watching and I'm just going, this isn't going anywhere. Like, this project is not going anywhere right now, you know? And I know, I get it. 7 rounds, I get it. A lot of new players, maybe some are unfit. But it's just like, now all of a sudden, Caicedo looks like he's been outed after whatever happened kind of last week with the sub late on. I mean, Kanga seems to be getting fitter, but also worser at the same time. So, you know, work that one out. I don't know. It's so grim. And this is someone who, you know, has tried to be positive about Perth in terms of, I actually think David Zrilich is a decent, like, should be a decent coach and should be able to, you know, and it's just like, there's literally no positives I can take from that performance yesterday. It was so bad.
So firstly, he didn't sign the players directly. I don't.
That's true.
Think
really That's true.
Built the project. That's just a fact of the matter of what's gone on. Also, the intel inside the club is that there was literally a guy coming directly from the Portuguese first year who had, by all means, you know, properly kind of signed, and then at the last minute looked around, heard what was going on, and basically said, I'm going to stay in Europe. Now, Stan didn't speak about any of this until it became obvious that there was a problem. I mean, imagine a world where this club is just doing what it's doing and is in, like, the Mariners' situation or ever so slightly worse, let's say Western's position. Does any of that come to light? No, it doesn't. So ultimately, like, I think Stan, he faced a lot of battles that he thought was just going to be magically kind of there and fixed, and ailed by the fact that there was this kind of new era, new dawn and everything like that being brought into the club. And now obviously we know with the revelations this afternoon that, like, that's a whole other thing that our club has to deal with. And I mean, like, Ross Pellegrini, you know, it wasn't like he bought the club directly out of receivership either. They sold to the Primeland Group. And I mean, they're going to have to go through this again. So, like, to say that just giving David time in the same way that they intended to give Aaron Stajic time is going to make it work, like, no. The club is still having a lot of issues. And if what is coming out about Ross is so serious that he has to upship and basically, like, exile to Sicily, like, What are we doing? Like, this is not a football club. And what really upsets me is that, like, it's just clear to me with Brisbane that there's a lack of, like, a decent football infrastructure. And I think a lot of what built it up in the golden days of Brisbane Roar was, if we're just real about it, was probably to do with the fact that they were just a brand new shiny franchise that was performing well in a sporting league, and a lot less to do with Queensland's actual footballing pedigree, right? Newcastle, I'm just not even really going to bother to comment on with regards to the fact that it's a small place. The lack of actually getting business investment into the area is a challenge that just goes so far beyond, you know, anything you or I could legitimately have a conversation about. All right, where I just fail to understand the repeated issues that are going on, both on and off, and I'm talking like 70-80% off here, because, like, there's actually no point talking about what's going on the pitch. Like, yeah, there just isn't. Yeah. But what really shits me is that, like, WA is obviously this, you know, this is a very obvious observation. WA is a wealthy state. It has a lot of natural resources that make it such, right? There's a lot of rich business people here, okay? The rugby union franchise almost folded. Literally, one of the richest men in Australia picked it up. And, like, they're doing pretty freaking well for themselves now, you know, in a competition that's maybe not doing so well. I mean, I'd say the A-League in areas is more better off than the Super Rugby, but the fact of the matter is Force are just very well, a very well-drilled unit at the moment, right? It just doesn't take that much effort to do this in Western Australia. So what's the fucking issue? Why are we still going in circles? Like if it has to come to this again, if they've literally got to sell again because of what's happening with regulators, what do you do? Like, where is even the slightest shred of faith that anyone can have?
Yeah.
Who is going to foot the bill and say this is something that they want to be a part of?
Yeah.
It's a joke, right? And the thing is, what even shits me to that degree is talking on the field, there are clubs who are like teetering on the brink of collapse and can still do this. You want to tell me that the Jets were in a good financial position when their Chinese owner was balls up in tariffs, you know, and they were still able to produce under Ernie Merrick, one of the most legendary teams in A-League history, like a super nostalgic
well, that, but watch. That's and, you know, we'll only spend like another kind of minute or so on this, but I'm a little bit, I don't know what this Rilich is doing a little bit too, to be honest with you. Like there's, and I know he cited like the conditioning and the fitness and all that stuff. I get it. But in saying that, it's like, yeah, but then like what's Riley Wallen doing playing yesterday? Like what? Like this is like, hang on. So how come? So you're talking about guys are not fit, they're not, and we need to put minutes in them to get them fit. Yeah, but doesn't that mean the best, so like the best course of action, and to your point, Matt, no matter what course of action he takes, it's probably still going to be bad anyway. You're right. But the thing that could maybe help the situation the most is, okay, we're not fit, but you know what I'll do? I'm just going to pick my best 11 that I think. I'm just going to play that 11 to the ground. So then hopefully it's going to build up some conditioning and some consistency, some relationships with each other on the pitch. And sooner or later, not sooner or later, but over time, we can slowly start to form something on the pitch as opposed to, like, it's just a bit chaotic. Like, I don't know who's going to play for Perth against Newcastle. Like, Kanga could be out of the squad for all I know. Like, Bar could be out of the squad suddenly again. Oli Sale might be back in goals. Like, I don't, you know, like, it's just a very helter-skelter. I don't know. And I think he also has been a little bit shocked by, and I know, Matt, I know you don't want to talk too much on the pitch because I get what you're saying. A lot of this is more off the pitch. But there's also been, I feel, like the MacArthur loss and the City losses in particular have kind of like, it's almost like Zrilic kind of went back to his shell and he's like, listen, okay, so we're so far off where we need to be. Like, let's just not do it anymore in terms of particularly the pressing style. And I'm just looking at like, yeah, but you could do that. But also like, what have you got to lose? Like how, no, I know what you're saying. I know, I guess what you're going to say is kind of like, yeah, but you got to try and maybe just get some results and be somewhat decent. But I'm just saying like, Even with Alan Stadish last year, as bad as it was, there was still the odd result like, oh, Perth just beat Melbourne City 3-1 at home and Joel Nasmo came off the bench and scored a winner. And that's a really fun night for the Shed, you know? Like, that's, there's kind of that still. And right now, I can't even see, like, Perth getting those this year. Like, it's really drab.
No, but I also, I think that there's, like, there's a few different factors as to why David Zrilich just has to like let it be. And I think the overwhelming majority of it is probably just squad and talent retention that's actually worth retention that you invest in long term, right? Because again, I think more to your point, something you've said previously is, you know, someone like Kwan and Go, pretty talented guy, but like as if he's actually getting like a starting game in someone like Riley Wharton is a good example. But specifically to the point of like the fact that There's not a good squad. There's not a good academy system. There's issues that they've just tried to resolve in real time that are going to be long-winded issues. And when you're dealing with that mentally, but you've actually got like a 27 game season ahead of you to deal with that, as if you're going to stick to your guns and go, yeah, there's this philosophy that I really am emboldened by and believe in and is me to my core, when Like, you're not actually personally in the environment where you're familiar with any of these younger guys, where, you know, you actually have the confidence to tell them this is how you play football. And to be honest, I mean, Alan went through much the same thing. Alan just understood the one or two players who could make a difference. And to be fair, it still ended up being like a slew of different youngsters that he brought in that would have that little X factor here or there. Kalen had the occasional game that's good. Someone like Joel Anasmo, where is he now? You know, go back to Ruben. Ruben did it with Joseph Ford. Joseph Ford is now in the League of Ireland.
Like, yeah, I know.
This is what we're talking about. So I just feel like if someone like David Zrilic actually wants to make it a long-term project, one, he's going to have to just tell himself and admit, I'm going to have a really fucking unpleasant time with the situation surrounding me. But if you can at least weather through that, then you will be able to build something. It's just that he's not in an environment where he really wants to do that. And again, I think he's probably just counting down the days until, I don't know, transfer window or something comes up. But even then, like the signing of Tommy Mertzler again, we have time constraints here, Christian, but the signing of Tommy Mertzler, it just sounds like they've gone, like, what is the quickest fix we can get? And just gone, yeah, there it is. Without David actually really applying any methodology to it, he's just gone, we're conceding a lot of goals. This is someone who can help. This is someone who's a WA local, like all of those metrics and aesthetics that you can apply to it as well. But like, has Mertzler ever played like with David or any of his assistants, I would probably almost certainly say there's no relationship there. So like, it's just something for the sake of being something.
Yeah. Quickly on Kwan Go. After I said that about him, like, he actually was Perth Glory's best player against Western United. So I'll just kind of mention that. But also, the last thing I'd say on this, because I do want to talk briefly about Melbourne Victory, is that I also, like, the defense for Zrilic could also be, he's kind of going, these are not my players, essentially. These are not players I wanted to sign, and I'm not going to play my football with them. There's also that too, like almost kind of a stubbornness maybe there. Who knows? I guess we'll just have to see how this evolves. Like, let's see. I mean, Perth have got Newcastle and Brisbane next, like two of the most winnable games that they'll have this season. So could we see some sort of progress? I'm not banking on it. Victory, I mentioned it before. They look fantastic. Their only Achilles heel at the moment is that they are allergic to scoring goals, like actually finishing the chances that come their way. Like, that game yesterday actually should have been 8-0, in my opinion. Like, and I'm not even like, I don't even think I'm over-exaggerating. Like, I don't know what the XG stats were and stuff like that, but what the fuck? Like, they created so many, like, clear openings in that game. Virgos got an assist. He continues to start ahead of Fornaroli, even though Fornaroli came on and I thought looked great. So there's a couple of, I think I said they're taking chances, but there's also some squad dynamic stuff where, like, Arzani comes off, looked like he was kind of shitty about it. I think he's kind of, like, I think if Arzani can play full games, like, he should play full games. I don't really understand why there's kind of this sort of, I know they've got a deep squad, but like he is like there with Mishash in terms of a creative outlet. He's been fantastic this season. And a lot of people are kind of sleeping on it with Arzani, I feel, because he hasn't actually backed it up with goals. And that's the big sort of issue with him at the moment. But yeah, I think he's been fantastic. Mishash is starting to score, which is good for them too. Teague and Valadon are just fantastic. Valadon was awesome yesterday in particular. Garia, the back three. Actually, Brendan Hamill and Roderick Miranda yesterday I thought were really good, particularly Miranda. Really, really good. And then, you know, that's the depth of the squad. Traore comes in for Casey Boss and looked fantastic. Scored a great goal and actually, you know, got forward and actually was a real threat. So yeah, Victory are looking awesome. I think you said who can challenge Auckland. Honestly, I actually think Melbourne Victory is the safest bet to be the premiers right now, if I'm looking at it.
Yeah, look, let me actually go on the rewind, the whole, you know, VHS cassette tape. It's not a VHS, I'm not talking about. Whatever the hell those old cassette tapes that you'd put in the music.
The VCR?
Am I having a stroke?
Yeah, I think possibly, yeah.
Yes, VCRs were what I meant. I just want to reflect on specifically what I meant, and I kind of skipped out victory in my analysis there. I think the whole verdict is probably, again, one with individuals where I know that there's been a bit of sort of lack of consistency. All the best Daniel Alzani that we've seen had the whole Vergos and Bruno situation that's kind of maybe healed a little bit. I think my verdict on victory, though, in the last couple of games in particular, I think the issue with actually judging just how good they are is the fact that they've actually just played total slop teams who just like have not been with it. No, but I mean, like when they played City were at one of their worst moments. Like they got through Western without much ease, but that's not really saying anything. Again, they made Perth look like traffic cones, but Perth kind of are just traffic cones. I'm pretty sure they've played Brisbane and beat Brisbane pretty easily as well. Do you kind of understand what I mean?
No, I get it. I get it. And you can also say, they beat MacArthur, and
That wasn't very convincing from memory. Like it wasn't.
no, I thought it was convincing.
Okay.
I think it's more like now we're looking at MacArthur and there's a maybe quick little discussion we can have about them, but they're looking like bad at the moment as well, a little bit. And they drew with the Mariners. Like, I get what you're saying. You can kind of I don't like doing that. I'll be honest with you, but here's what Victory have got coming up, and this is actually where we're going to kind of see. Basically, they play over the next 7 games. They've got the Christmas Derby. They've got two big Blues. They've got Auckland away on New Year's Day. They've got Wanderers at home, which the Wanderers are kind of in a little bit of a decent spell at the moment. So yeah. Oh, and they've got Adelaide away on the 18th of January. So it's definitely this next period, you're right, is going to kind of really be all right. Let's see how serious they are. But I do feel in the A League, like if you are able to dominate shit teams, I know that's like putting it ruthlessly, but if you can, like if a Perth comes to Amy Park and you're like, listen, from minute one, like you're not even getting near the ball and like we're just going to beat you easily, that is a good sign, in my opinion. Because we've seen Sydney FC, for example, play, like MacArthur at home, for example, like a team who I think they should be able to beat with some comfortability, I would say. And in the end, like Hayden Matthews gets sent off and the game kind of gets a bit chaotic and they lose 2-1. Like, I don't think that happens. Like, that didn't happen with Melbourne Victory, for example. There seems to be a bit more of a steadiness, I guess, to the way things are going for them. But yeah, let's see how they go over the next period. Do you want to talk about the derby first, the New Zealand derby, or should we talk about the other team in the tri-series and their opponent on Friday, who actually looks like they're kind of hitting some good form at the moment? You take your pick.
This is hard because I've been pretty predisposed on my narrative that Melbourne City are just going to be a bit average. And I think that, again, to reflect on, the derby, like we've seen the kind of lowest of lows. But I think we've also seen some pretty good highs. Again, I hate to play the card again, but like the two biggest highs we've seen have been Perth and Brisbane, right? So I just don't know what to make of them. And I think you're a bit harsh in your assessment of MacArthur. But again, to compare where MacArthur's ceiling was kind of round one, round two, to the way that they've fallen, the intricacies of what's going on there. To Melbourne City, where you'd say, I think Melbourne City have shown that uniformity at a scale that really opens up more of the way they can play and the way that ends up translating into, an element of success. And I think, again, for people who are worried about how bad the kind of four or five teams are at the back, to then want to say, I think you can start to put a bit of a lock on the top six. I mean, this is probably elimination final Melbourne City territory that we're walking into, because again, I think enough people, and rightly so, would have trust issues of a MacArthur or a Mariners. And you just at the moment, the way things are, you'd probably have to put City a little bit further ahead, just because we've actually been able to see them rack up the scoreline, just because we've been able to see some of their talent, both sort of foreign and academy based, play at a higher level, play at a better level as well. It's just one of those things that I think will see City sit kind of exactly where they need to be, but not anywhere near exactly where they want to be. And I think that's the thing people forget.
Well, they've got like similar to victory, it's kind of like, okay, now we're going to see these next few games because it's Auckland at home next Sunday, which is a massive game. I think that's really fascinating because it's Auckland going away for only the second time to Australia. And it's also Melbourne City. Hey, like, let's see if you can actually break down this stubborn Auckland defense without all these attackers that are injured for them. But this is my other point with them where I actually think, you know, retroactively, you might look at it and think, like, their recruitment might have actually been sneaky decent this offseason, Melbourne City. Like, because Kai Truen's been great. He's slotted in perfectly. Now, Atkinson, there's a little bit of a question mark, but also I think he's been kind of just fucked around with in terms of position and used in different roles because guys have been out and all this sort of stuff. So I want to see him kind of get consistent run at right back before I really pass judgment. But Kuen and Cohen, who both weirdly have really similar sounding names. And I know, I get it. It's Brisbane and they both played really well against Perth and it's Perth. I understand. But just from a quality standpoint and a technical quality and a fit for what Melbourne City want to do in terms of their system, I think those two are really good. And I think Kuen in particular is going to be a real problem this season, like for the rest of the season. So with them, I actually think if Kuen and Cohen can kind of like put the team a little bit on their shoulders whilst the Lekkies, not Naboo because he won't come back, but Lekki and Tilio in particular are out, you know, that's kind of massive for them. Like, can they just be a decent team whilst those two are out? Tilio will probably come back at some point in particular. I think Lekki definitely will. And then, okay, like, let's see Lekki, Tilio, Kuen, Cohen, Atkinson. Like, all right, now you've got a really good team full of some names that can actually do something. But you're right. Like, there's definitely an asterisk against some of those wins. You can't look past that. The other thing is that Melbourne City probably just made like one of the best assistant coach appointments you will ever see. So, you know, and I'm referring to my guy, Paul Pezos. So, just keep that in mind too, just to elevate the coaching around that group.
How warm inside does it make you feel knowing that Stephen Jurgakovic, Aziz Bajic, and Paul Pezos have all sat at a table and had a conversation? I mean,
I think it's fantastic. The aura is insane.
Moving on.
So Brisbane are terrible. Brisbane suck. But that's not news, is it?
Sorry, this is maybe already like the Woolabith to home. I've just scrolled to look at some like stats, and I've seen Warland and Hingett and Van der Sarg, and just going, fuck. Am I gonna have to talk about these boys again?
The other thing is, like, I haven't watched the Zakovic presses in the last couple of weeks, to be fair, but I don't know, like, so Raw fans seem like they're totally done with him already. Like, that's one thing for sure. I think
it's too similar to Perth, though.
I know, but
it's too far gone. Like,
I agree, but also there is some weird stuff. Like, where a couple of weeks ago he was like, after the Adelaide loss, he was kind of like, yeah, look, we've had a tough schedule. You know, we played Sydney, Victory, Auckland, Adelaide. It's like, mate, you've just listed half of the competition. Like, at some point, if half of the competition is a tough schedule, like, okay. So basically, you're just saying that your team's just not good enough to be a top 16. Like, if we're reading between the lines, and that's actually true. But I'm not too sure if you want to indirectly say that out in public. And I don't know. Like, he just seems to be a little bit delusional about kind of, oh, it's a process and, you know, like, you know the phrase, if anyone, actually, Raw fans will probably laugh at this. If you ever watch a Zakovic press conference, he uses this line all the time. My belief never wavers. He says that all the time. It's like a fucking Ruben Zakovic press catchphrase.
It's actually the biggest quote when his A-League's All Access episode started. 3 seconds in, it was him saying that to Glory.
Yeah. My belief never wavers.
Never wavers.
It's like, is your belief? I think your belief will waver the next time you see Ben Warland, like, again, fuck up on some sort of, you know.
Here's the thing, man. I can respect Ruben a lot. People, don't have the memory of the fact that he quite literally almost got Glory into the six.
It's a
he
good point.
Came absurdly close to getting Glory into the six. And the thing with this team is that, again, the recruitment was based off, this is literally someone who's played X amount of A-League games. Let's put them into the team with
legit.
Zero fucking consideration whatsoever. Also, Ruben taking a few of his Perth boys that he just forgot of aged a couple years and aren't going to be who they were when they were younger. It's just, it's a toxic mix in a team that hasn't been good in a long time. And it is not worth talking about for so as long as they're just, this is them for the next 26 weeks. Nothing's going to change. All right? Like, you just have to accept it. And again, similar to Zrilic, you just have to focus on the one or two things that aren't going to work and take a step back and kind of humble yourself. I think Zrilic has it in him to humble himself. Ruben Zadkovic doesn't have it in him to humble himself.
No, because his belief never wavers. But
well, that's it. That's it. His belief never wavers. And I don't think a single person who was sitting in that room, you know, Berkiora was in that room. I'm telling lies. I don't think a single person who was in that room actually, like, I don't think their belief in his project, you know, wavered. They all wavered. But Berkiora didn't. Berkiora didn't waver.
Yeah, because he signed up for a bit more of Zad's ball.
Yeah.
But yeah. They're shocking. So the only thing I look forward to with them now is watching young Jacob Brasete cook on the left wing. Hopefully Ruben just starts him from now on.
Give McNichol more game time. I know I said this on a rival show, but give McNichol game time.
Is he? Maybe, you know, whilst we're talking about the other stuff, I'll just check, because I don't know if he's actually like nursing some sort of injury or something, and we're just, I don't think so though. Let me check whilst we talk. Let's the New Zealand derby. We've got to talk about that. It's actually 56 minutes in and we haven't spoken about that. So Chiefy Ball was unable to beat Corrigan Ball. And it was a tough day. It was a tough day for all the Italiano truthers, captain of the fan club over here in particular. So yeah, we had to cop that one. We had to cop that one. Our opinion though on the fan club is that the Wellington players let Chiefy down. In all seriousness, I think we have to, like, obviously we have to give Auckland a lot of credit for the defensive stuff. They are seriously hard to break down. There's no doubt about it. I think that it's actually not so much like beating their press, playing through them in the midfield third. Like, I think teams can do that. But they're actually, ironically, they're actually a little bit similar to Wellington last year, where when it comes to defending the penalty area, like, they're probably the best in the competition right now. You know, and I mean, Matt, you know more about, like, someone like Nando Pijnicka than me. But, like, that guy is fucking one of the best centre-backs in the competition. Like, it's not even, he's just come in and is just like, listen, like, I should have been here ages ago. I'm elite. And like, and Dan Hall, you know, I want to give him credit. He's another one where I felt he was going to be one of those players where you take him out of the Mariners system and you put him in this new team and he might not be as good, but he's been great. So those two together have been fantastic. Vastrata even went off halfway through the game and I kind of felt, ooh, that's a big blow, because that's kind of their main ball winner in the midfield. But They were still able to kind of hold Wellington. In saying that, Wellington, I think they're capable of playing better, and I think they just didn't kind of show up. I don't know why there was just a lack of composure on the ball. Maybe too many guys were kind of playing the occasion as opposed to just playing their own sort of style in their football. But there were a few times in the first half where Wellington played through. They got in behind a couple of times. Sheridan had a chance, which was blocked, which was like a really well-worked move. So Chiefy changed things up system-wise too, which was interesting for Auckland in particular. So he's even trying to kind of solve this sort of puzzle of Auckland and their defense. But yeah, at the end of the day, Auckland have got kind of this real sort of, like, they're really building this winning mentality at the moment. Like, they're very sort of locked in every week. You can see they're getting confidence every result. I don't know if we want to talk about the coaching, the back and forth between Chiefy and Corriger. I still think Chiefy's point stands. Like, you know, that they've only been outside of New Zealand once. So I think that is a fair point. But at the end of the day, if you are going to talk about that before the game, you know, you kind of have to back it up with a decent performance, and Wellington didn't. So, you know, that's 2-0 to Corrigan on the season.
I just want to talk to something very, very pertinent on your initial point on Auckland's back line. Take De Vries, who's actually, I believe, in his 30s now. Neto Planeka, Dan Holt, all right? All of these guys, they're not young anymore. If you look at their resumes, they have spent time in the fucking football abyss, okay? I really mean that. Like, Nando Pineker was barely getting a game in the League of Ireland, okay? They've been moulded by the environment around them, and their ageing and the experience on top of the environment that they're in is a combination that has made them these really sturdy players. Like you've said, it's your first time watching someone like Nando Pineker, and he's been able to produce at that value. Watch a game he was playing for the All Whites 3 years ago. It's not him. But how do we build quality players in this part of the world? I can tell you, it's literally through being in the right place at the right time and being kind of old. Aaron Mooy broke out at Melbourne City out of nowhere when he was comfortably on, if not, I'd struggle to remember, you know, that Harry Navio, Bruno Fornaroli era, but Aaron Mooy wasn't young at the time. He was like
26, something like that.
Yeah, exactly. Nando Pineker, I believe, is 26. Francis De Vries,
yes, he is.
I believe he's in his 30s. Dan Hall, I want to say, is 24, 25 at this rate. Again, bit around the traps for a while, was in that environment at the Mariners where he was able to flourish, just naturally became a better player. It's all about circumstance and growing as a footballer in this part of the world. And there we go. I actually made my point ever so slightly more coherently that time. But, you know, I feel like what we really miss in talking about, oh, this player's of a really quality level, so much of it really comes down to your belief building on aesthetics. And again, I think that a lot of the players that have built up in that Wellington team have slowly but surely realized over time they started out in an environment that was producing at a really high level. You know, they'd had a few final series under, you know, Ulfi Talley. If you even want to go back further, I'm not sure anyone would be surviving, but Mark Redan got them to consecutive finals as well. Phoenix have just had a DNA of success that's built over time. And what people really, really miss on this is that like a grown belief in success is the catalyst for a good football team. And we're going to see a mix of that with Auckland over time. People talk about the travel being a big factor. It's going to hit a lot of those boys in a big way. A lot of those Kiwis have never really gone and done those consistent trips. The overseas boys, I mean, Lewis Verstrada's already made a few comments that are very concerning about the travel as well. I look at a performance like this. I look at someone like Sakai with the way that he just dominates on the wing, is able to create from where he is on the park. And I'm just looking at a team that has a formula that knows is going to work. And because it's unproven, it's even more lethal because of the fact. And then you add all everything else that I'm kind of getting at here, where like Liam Gillian doesn't have any fear. Someone like Gallegos is new to the league and in a successful pairing that's going to make him even better as a player. Like I see that in droves. It's never really going to stop. I think it's another reason why expansion clubs always start out really well. Western United started out as an incredibly well-structured football club because they didn't exist previously. The Wanderers, you know, there's a lot of examples like that. And again, I feel like people really want to read deeply into this, into the what's working and tactically how they're set up. And yes, Stephen Corrigan is a proven coach, but he's got those players believing in the project, and that's the biggest catalyst for success.
That's right. But also, I think, and you have to give him credit, I think he's also actually looked at it, and I don't know whether he took this away from the Sydney FC job, but he kind of came, and he mentioned this recently, he was like, basically, if you look historically, the team with pretty much the best defensive record usually wins the premiership, essentially. And it's sometimes as simple as that. And he's just kind of gone back to basics and said, listen, we're going to defend, like we're going to make our bones off our defending, essentially. And we've got enough quality in this team that we can play a bit more in transition and rely on that quality when we go forward. And that's what's paying off for them at the moment. I am still interested though, not because the thing about the travel thing is when they played MacArthur in United round, Corrigan said after the game, he was like, it's like they were really tired, like by the 70th minute. And that was kind of like a real sort of, ooh, okay, like first trip and already it's kind of like, bang, like after 70 minutes, these guys are done. So let's see how it kind of how they go next week against Melbourne City. A team who they'll probably be more than happy to just sit in and say, hey, knock yourselves out, have 70% of the ball, we'll defend. So that's going to be really interesting. And yeah, I think Wellington have lost two games now and they've both been to Auckland. So that would be infuriating, of course. But I think it's actually bizarre how I actually think Wellington and the Mariners are actually following these really similar paths where it's actually like, now Italiano is trying to evolve the style too, like Jackson is trying to do that. And they're also both trying to do it whilst having half of their team gutted from the previous year. You know, I still think, because I go back to like when Wellington beat the Mariners recently, and that was kind of the big sort of staple of like, okay, this is where Wellington want to go this year in terms of the way they want to play. So, and you know, again, a better touch, a better pass, a couple of moments like that in this game against Auckland, they could have created a little bit more too. So yeah, let's see how they go moving forward. All right. There was one other game this round, but there's just not much to say about it. Weston and MacArthur drew nil all. Weston had more of the chances. They probably should have won the game. It's probably more about MacArthur and how they didn't really create much, and that really for a few weeks now, just under the radar, they've kind of been terrible. And yeah, basically since that Sydney FC win, they just haven't been great. So if you want to do a couple minutes on MacArthur, concern?
I don't know that I can necessarily diagnose it, but I maybe don't want to give...
No, you're not a fucking surgeon, mate. Just give us an opinion.
Well, I don't want to give up faith, but I think you're right in that we've already kind of got Western in a bit of a kind of lower tier with the talent that they have in their squad, with the fact that Aloisi's trying things that I don't think he has completely full faith in. So for Milos Sajovske's team to fall apart, when, like, he's actually someone that's been in the league for a while now with this exact same club, trying to not bring up the tragedy of what happened in the offseason and the players that were lost because of it. You know, I feel like he's actually kind of run out of excuses to be able to just fall back on the fact that they have fallen apart a bit from their high ceiling. And what worries me is that last season was exactly the same. But I would say that I have slightly more faith in this group than I would the group that kind of fell apart last season, only because it seems as though a lot of players that have been brought
fell apart
in,
fell apart last season?
Yeah. MacArthur did, yeah.
You mean in what sense?
In the sense that they like started the initial rounds, especially.
Oh yeah. Like when they were kind of hovering second, sort of.
Second, and again,
third.
Jermaine was someone that was at the head of that. But I think again, looking at Jed Drew, you know, Bratton again, certainly a Marignacalis. I just feel like there's actually more edge there than there was last season. And I think ultimately, again, it looks as though we can pretty much say that Milos Stojowski is not going to be like a Premier's Plate winner or anything with this team. But I just feel like if they can at least find their edge again, they will do okay. I'm very rarely am I one to make a positive comment with like a negative inflection on it, but I think you kind of understand what I'm getting at. I also don't think that someone like Luke Bratton, who, you know, at the end of the day, has basically got Socceroos caps off the back of his early performances in their cup, you know, winning run. I just don't think that that's actually the sign of a team that is going to be sitting there 7th, 8th, 9th, existing for the sake of existing in the same way we've maybe seen it in the Wanderers, in the same way that we have seen it be in MacArthur's DNA a little bit. I just feel like there's enough of an edge there and there's enough going on in the bottom part of the six and the Mariners kind of calming up a little bit as well for MacArthur to really stay in that mix. Specifically on the game on the weekend, though, I don't really know how to approach that, because you're right in saying that Western were probably almost certainly the better team, and within what might be going wrong at MacArthur, I don't know where exactly you diagnose that.
I just talked about how Wellington, the Mariners in particular, and Sydney as well, a little bit, like they're trying to... Like, if I just feel like they're always trying to evolve what they're doing. And my fear with MacArthur would be that they're just kind of running back what they did last year and hoping like it's just going to get them fifth, basically. And like, yeah. And to be fair, I put them there because I thought, yeah, this would probably work in this league, like again, because it's the way it is. But I just think they're just too one-dimensional. That's kind of what it just seems like, where it's just kind of, if I almost feel like teams are actually kind of going now, like, hey, you're not good with the ball, so we're actually going to give you the ball, and you're going to actually have to break us down today. Like, we're going to defend, and you have to break us down, as opposed to, yeah, we're going to take some risks on the ball, and we're going to leave us exposed so you can, like, kill us on the counterattack with Jermaine and Yakalis. Like, no, you're not doing that today. And I think teams are getting a bit more wise to the way McArthur want to play, and I'm worried that Sojovsky and that coaching staff isn't actually thinking about ways to evolve, or they don't feel they have the personnel to do that, or they're too reliant on someone like Valer Germain to kind of just prop up what they want to do on the ball and going forward. So it's definitely a team to watch for me, because I thought in possession, particularly on Saturday, they were horrible. I just don't think they offered anything in the game. So it's one to watch for sure. Also, interesting situation where Tommy Uscock got dropped, which was fair enough for his performance against Brisbane. Then Ollie Jones, who hadn't even played a minute, just suddenly got drafted in to start, and Matt Yerman was out of the squad. So not sure if there's someone else going on there, but again, just a team to keep an eye on for me.
I think also the concerning thing on something like that is when you have a personality that is Tommy Uscock, I mean, just look and listen to the guy. Mixed in with...
Don't judge a book by its cover, Matt.
I mean, I've actually heard some stories about him, so whatever. I think the biggest thing, though, is just like that, like, because of their DNA, because of all of the shit that's happened in their history, McArthur is the one club where, like, if there's telltale signs of a player being unsettled, you're like, you know what, there's probably something cooking there. And, I mean, if you really want to open up the can of worms, not this kind of podcast, just a brief suggestion, all right, keeping it tight, The fact of the matter is it's because the club really struggles for culture. 2017, Foxtel expansion, you know, blah, 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 blah. Super, super long story short, there's probably the reason why that is the case. So, yeah.
Oh, no. Please launch into a seven-minute monologue about the FA expansion in 2017. Oh man! All right, let's get it. That's going to wrap up our kind of review of round seven. I think we kind of hit everyone in different sort of areas there. Some harshly, some with praise. So yeah, let's take a quick little break. When we come back, we'll finish really quickly with some predictions for round eight. Okay, so round eight predictions, like we always finish on the podcast, quick fire. No explanations, which I said to Jake before we did ours last week, and then I started giving explanations for my predictions. Nice contradicting worked by the podcast host. But Matt, let's do these quickly. So you mentioned this one is an interesting game. Mariners at home to Adelaide United on Friday night. Score prediction, please.
Especially in Gosford, and especially with the fact that Adelaide, like, they have to lose eventually, especially for a team that's not even actually that good. So I'm actually going to comfortably, that's a bit harsh. I'm going to pick the Mariners 2-1.
I'm going to agree with you. I did stupidly pick Newcastle against Adelaide because I felt like that was like some banana skin where Adelaide were going to lose. Then I learned that Newcastle was shit. So yeah, but I'll go that Mariners 2-1-2. Wellington at home to McArthur, the first of four games on Saturday.
I mean, look, I'd like to be able to see more from McArthur, but the fact of the matter is they're going to New Zealand. And I would almost certainly bet that Phoenix team is going to be pretty fired up from the fact that they were, that they were really far from their best against Auckland. So I'm going to chalk down Phoenix 2-0.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you exactly again. 2-0. We need to stop doing this. Okay, Sydney FC, Western United, the next game on Saturday. Actually, the precursor to a doubleheader with the woman that got moved today. I believe the women are actually playing after in a doubleheader. What do you got?
Yeah, look, Western, I just think that they're probably in football limbo at the moment. You can't expect the team in that position to go away to Sydney and get the result. I also just think that with some of their inconsistencies, Sydney have a lot to give. Similar kind of comeback kind of factor that we're talking with Wellington, where they've got to let something come into them to prove that they're superior. They've had the loss. Yeah, I'm actually, well, I'll tell you what, could they even chalk up the score a little bit? Could it even be like a 3 or a 4 nil?
I was going to say 3-0 to
Yeah.
Sydney.
Yeah, let's go 3 nil.
Okay, so we have agreed exactly on 3 out of 3 games. Fuck. Okay. Western Sydney Wanderers at home to Brisbane Roar on Saturday night at CommBank.
Let me actually say one thing that, again, if you agree with this, I'm going to be kind of annoyed because I think it is maybe a bit more on the hot takey side. I think this will be a really high scoring game.
Okay, yep.
And I say that because I think the Wanderers are actually similar to Perth when Stadler was with them. They just knew how to be pretty chaotic at times. And with their current predicament and inconsistency, they will be the type of team to win a game, 4-3, 5-4, that kind of thing. Not saying it's going to be that high and go to those historic levels, but yeah, I'm going to pick a really, really high scoring game. I also just think that, like, Raw's one good thing is that, like, they can, have that bit of X factor going forward. So let's put it at 4-2 to the Wanderers.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, you've made a very compelling case. I will go 4-3 to the Wanderers. Why not make it just slightly more chaotic? But yeah, I see what you mean. No, but I see what you mean because, like, the Wanderers got the clean sheet against Melbourne City, but I don't think, like, it was necessarily like a really like solid defensive performance or anything like that. Like they're very yeah, the defending still seems very fugazi. So yeah, and Brisbane obviously
And
are.
like any good Stagage team, they know how to score. So, like,
Yeah. And Brisbane obviously like an indictment against football the way they defend. So yeah, 4-3 Wanderers for me. Perth Glory. Don't know why I yelled that. At home to
oh
Newcastle.
my God.
trying to excite myself for the on the pod.
Ever so
Yeah.
keen.
Same vibe. Perth Glory at home to Newcastle Jets. Saturday night kickoff in Perth. Matthew Olsen. Can Cyrilla Ball get a ton? Yeah.
I want to see more of that kind of Adelaide away style where there was a bit more control in the midfield. Again, I know that the midfield's been like one of the biggest, like most systemically fucked parts of why Gloria is so bad. The transition opens up the defense, and then the defense isn't even that good to, deal with literally anything. But this is against Newcastle, and for whatever reason, that bag of confidence came out in some of those guys against Adelaide. I can see that really opening up. And ultimately, again, the club's under fire this week in the media. Things will happen. I just this is like just it's the bare minimum to ask for. It's I don't know. If they don't win this, I would actually back some of my mates that are calling for a boycott. I'm not even joking. I'd buy the shirt and I'd wear it into the press box. Like I'd go that far because it's just like again, the bar's so low. Like this is a team that's going to win 3, 4 games a season. This is one of those games. We're quite literally looking at it, okay?
I'm feeling my role as the editor of the publication. I have to interject and say that you should not wear a
Oh,
boycotted
FPF top,
shirt.
FPF top, FPF top. Yeah,
And
forgot we have
also
those.
that.
Forgot we have those. Sorry, of course. I wouldn't break a uniform, Cody. Are you kidding?
Yeah. What the hell? Yeah, there's serious reprimanding for that here. Score?
Is this team going to score 2 goals? Because I'm tossing
I mean,
up between.
they did score 2 goals against Adelaide and they got Adam Taggart, so.
No, I'll stick with 1-0.
1-0. The more surprising thing is you think Perth are going to keep a clean sheet. I'm going to go 2-2. And I don't really know why, from the point of view of, like, as if this new
Can I actually
Newcastle
just directly
team.
counter you there? What, Newcastle 1 goal in 3, 4 games? Two
Yeah,
goals in
but
four.
Perth are disgusting defensively. Like that's yeah, I just don't. Like,
Yeah, no, I get you.
I don't know. Yeah. And
I
then,
get you.
and I think Perth are going to score twice because Newcastle. Anyway, we said no explanations. What are we doing? But just, yeah, Taggart's probably going to feast on a couple of chances as well. 2-2 for me. Last one. Melbourne City, Auckland. For me, yes, game of the round. Game of the round. So what have you got?
1-1 draw.
1-1 draw. Mm. I'm going to go... I'm going to go for a Melbourne City win. I get it,
to be honest.
Like, even though I tipped against Auckland in the derby, but that was more because it was a chiefy, like, believer, truther sort of prediction. But I reckon we're going to see the Auckland loss here.
I was going to say Louis Ferry Bushkash Fenton.
What? I don't even know what. I'll actually go 2-0 Melbourne City. I think they might kind of expose Auckland a little bit in terms of them on the ball, and we might not see Auckland score in this game. So I'll go 2-0. Melbourne victory have the bye as well. So
I'd give the bye a chance. I'd give them a sniff, but victory.
No, but that's just a victory chalking up another easy win. Like, seriously. So that's, you know, far out. Anyway, that's going to do it. I think we covered pretty much every team in the pod. And, we've got some spicy predictions there. So, any closing remarks, Mr. Olsen?
Look, if the international window could come back sooner, that would be fun. But I've got to wait until March.
Yeah.
So I didn't even catch the Matildas friendlies because I was watching the bloody A-League. So, you know, that's... Can it just be March already?
Done.
And we got to wait until... We can wait until February even for the next AFC club window. Like, it's...
Yeah, because everyone listening to the pod is just can't wait for the next AFC club window. So
I mean, look, I
actually, to be fair, the Sydney FC side of it, but yeah.
Well, no, I mean, just look at what Lion City Sales have been able to do out of that group. Like, I think the AFC, the ACL2 in particular, is really cooking at the moment. Like, it's good competition. Unlike the A-League, you know, no bottom feeder clubs in the ACL, mate.
What? Not even like fucking Eastern or Kaya.
Kaya actually went 1-0.
Here we go.
But also with Eastern, I can't defend Eastern. Like, you're kidding me? I can't. One of the Vietnamese teams in one of the lower groups as well, and then don't even want to get into like.
You're asking me to get in my bag right now, and now it's just
going to extend the pod. From Turkmenistan, like, there are some grim teams going around.
Yeah. All right. So yeah, Matt. Wants for Christmas. He wants the international window. That's his wish for Christmas. So yeah, let's get to March for Matt. Yep. March for Matt. Yeah. Double meaning. Anyway, that's gonna do it for this episode of the Front Page Football Podcast. Thanks, Matt, once again.
#it.
Yeah. #hashtag March at Matt. #hashtag Perth be decent for one fucking week, please. Like, please. Anyway, let's see. Surely that can get the dub against Stanton Bull. I don't know. Anyway, lots of action to look forward to. Make sure you watch Melbourne City Auckland. I reckon that's going to be a fantastic game on Sunday. It's also standalone by itself because you got the four games on Saturday. Then that's just by itself on Sunday. So I'm looking forward to that. But yeah, that's going to do it. This episode of the Front Page Football Podcast. We'll be back next week. Still kicking on as normal during the festive period. And until then, it's bye for now.